You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 597. John Black, and the reason English John Black is here instead of John G is because John G decided to go see Jackie the Choke Man Martling down in Philadelphia, and that leaves you with me, the most notorious pirate of the Seven Seas, English John Black. Hallie Bullen, are you excited to be on this Jolly Roger of an episode?
Ahoy there, matey.
And more, are you ready to pirateer and be the greatest fear to the throne of England over the next hour and 30 minutes?
Oi, Queen Elizabeth, better watch out.
Right. So you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We've got a lot of news to cover for you today, so we're not going to do a whole lot of spieling and wheeling because we've got a lot of pirateering to do. And in the meantime, here is some mail, and I'm going to continue my English accent, even though I can tell it is driving Hallie Bullen up the
some
wheel.
Mile. Some mile? Didn't read the mail, John.
All right, this is from Nick D, and here's what Nick D has to say. On episode 596, you were discussing the connection between rap and hardcore and the origin of this crossover. Can't some of these roots be found in the New York rap and hardcore scene in the 80s around the time of the Beastie Boys, at least for NYHC? Also, I'm guessing the Player Haters Ball video you talked about is a reference to the old Chappelle Show skit of the same name. No one mentioned it, so I figured to say that it exists. Always keep up the good work from Nick D. Thanks for running, Nick. You can always reach the podcast at punknews.org. As to the Player Haters Ball, I mean, the Player's Ball I learned about through South Park, but if Chappelle's got, Hannibal, you know more about stand-up comedy than I do. Is there a Chappelle skit, the Player Haters Ball? I mean, maybe there is.
No, I don't know any. I know so little about that era of Chappelle stuff. I hadn't even owned a television in those years. I wasn't married to a comedian yet, and I didn't give a shit about TV or a comedy. I would like just liked punk rock, so I don't know. I suppose we could Google it.
We could, but why bother? So maybe the video is a reference to the Chappelle Show video. I don't know, and frankly, I'm not going to Google it. But Nick, thanks for writing in on regards to that. With regards to the hip-hop, I don't know if I would agree to cite it towards the Beastie Boys. Without question, the Beastie Boys are the first rap-rock crossover. I think they got – I mean, well, unless you go back to the earliest days of hip-hop when, like, Afrika Bambaataa would sample Kraftwerk. Or when Sheik would Sheik were influenced by guys like Bob James or whatever. But as far as hardcore and hip-hop, certainly Beastie Boys were the first hardcore punk band that were also a hip-hop band. But I don't think there's really – I mean, if you look at the earliest Beastie Boys hip-hop 12-inches, Cookie Puss – well, I mean, if you look at their hardcore stuff, there's Polywog Stew. That's the only hardcore release they put out. There's no hip-hop – really on the, I mean, that's a strictly punk album or EP. And then if you look at their first hip hop singles, Cookie Puss, Rock Hard, This Party's Getting Rough, Drum Machine, whatever that track is called, MCA with Berzuti, is there's not really any punk rock there. I think the first time the Beastie Boys mixed punk rock back with hip hop was on the Paul's Boutique B side, 33% God, where they sampled Black Flag's Rise Above. Certainly, Licensed Ill has rock influences with Black Sabbath samples and Led Zeppelin samples, but I don't think the and if anything, the Beastie Boys were hip hop. When the Beastie Boys were just hip hop, there really wasn't that much punk at all in the music. And I think that was kind of the point. Whereas if we look at modern hardcore, you know, like the slang is borrowed from hip hop. Even the way people dress with the backwards hat and the basketball jersey, that all comes from hip hop. Expensive sneakers, I mean, that's hip hop style without question. Not originally punk. Original punk rock style. If you look at the early Cro-Mags, if you look at early Reagan Youth, if you look at early Agnostic Front, they're all dressed like skinheads with the boots and the jeans, not like hip hop culture at all. I really do think, and of course, hip hop, because NYHC comes from New York, it is a very multicultural area, and certainly there is influence there from the multicultural angle. And I just think that in the late 80s, with bands like 25 to Life and bands like Furia 5, and I think those are the first hardcore bands to start using hip hop imagery, hip hop slang, and I think most prominently and most and earliest hip hop font on their album covers. Their album covers look like they were graffiti. And so I think it really, I mean, and I'm not disrespecting the Beastie Boys, but I don't think the NYHC hip hop, I don't think NYHC borrowing from hip hop culture comes from the Beastie Boys. I think it comes from the bands that followed in the wake of the Cro-Mags and Agnostic Front. I don't know, Hallie, do you guys have any perspective on that?
I really don't. I was actually curious to hear you talk about it because I don't feel like I really know much about that.
Same.
Well, there you have it. And honestly, like I don't always feel great about it because I'm not too big on, you know, I mean, I don't get too hung up on the concept of appropriation. I think it does exist, but I think that phrase was overused. But on the other hand, when you have all non-black people, I don't mean just white people, but non-black people using words that probably only black people should use if they want to use them at all, you know, or certain affectations, it seems almost disrespectful in a way, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason you're doing it is because hip hop, at least the hip hop that a lot of the hardcore bands borrow from, is kind of considered tough. You know, rarely do those guys reference like Chance the Rapper or guys like Digital Underground. Rather, they usually reference like Wu-Tang or NWA or any of or even like The Game or 50 Cent, like the more tougher, quote, tougher guys. And so the reason I find that hardcore bands often borrow from hip hop culture is to appear tougher. But on the other hand, it could be just that hip hop culture is so pervasive that they're not even borrowing it for any reason. It's just that this is the culture I grew up in, even though I'm not black. This culture is so pervasive, it's spread out to outside its original brain, I guess. I mean, you could write a thesis on this for sure. You know what I mean? It's a very complicated and hard to pin down subject. You know, the nice thing is you very directly can define what hip hop culture is because it was defined by Afrika Bambaataa, emceeing, beatboxing, graffiti, breakdancing. And I think I'm missing one. I'm always emceeing, DJing, 5. So it is kind of cool that you could say that's what hip hop culture is. You know, I don't know. It's very amorphous, but I do think there's something there. And that actually would be a kind of an interesting article, but you'd have to treat it very gingerly. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
you ready to take it on, John?
No. I'm talking about Chumbawamba. I'm so turned off by the super tough guy. Like, I've been to a bunch of hardcore shows lately, and there's so much posing and so much roostering, and it's like, you're so... If you go around puffing out your chest and saying you're a tough guy, you're probably not that tough of a guy. Because, I mean, here's another punk rock, hip-hop crossover I'll talk about that will change the subject. Back when I lived in the Bay Area, I would go to like these underground rap battles and hip-hop shows a lot. And there actually were some pretty tough guys. I mean, heavy-duty guys. And guys that actually are heavy-duty don't go around looking for a fight. You know what I mean? Because if there's a fight, it's going to be bad news. They kind of like... are more interested in like talking to girls or whatever. Not that I'm saying they're good guys, because they're not. But really tough guys don't go around looking to beat up other guys. They are looking to drink and hit on chicks. You know, like really heavy duty guys. You know what I mean? And they're not even the heaviest duty. That's just my experience. I'm being vague here, but whatever.
The heaviest duty.
Anyways, duty.
Episode 10.
Yeah. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. We love getting your mail. Thanks for writing in. And more. Play a tune and then welcome back for your listening pleasure, listeners.
Okay. So today, Single Mothers announced a new album, and Single Mothers are one of my favorite bands of all time. I love them so much. Anytime I get a chance to see them, like, it's just the best day. So today they announced their new album, and they released their first song, and the song's called Baby Bird. So here's Baby Bird by Single Mothers.
And that was Single Mothers doing Baby Bird and Moore's favorite band playing the tunes just for you.
No, wait, so wait, just because that wasn't like a news thing that we like were, you know, like agreed to talk about. This was just something you are like so excited about and wanted to play. Like who, I don't even know who Single Mothers are. Like who's this band? Tell me about this band.
What? Okay, so they are a hardcore punk band out of like London and Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And so... Have you heard of Drew Thompson?
No.
Okay, so Drew Thompson is, like, mainly the only permanent member, and then the rest is, like, a rotating cast. So they never have, like, a set lineup kind of thing, so you don't know really who you're going to see.
Wait a minute. Have we talked about... That's all of a sudden, it like, bells are going off. Have we talked about this band on the podcast before?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So good to have a recap. Okay, so London, main person, and then rotating cast. Yeah, and it's like super hard, right? It's really hard.
It's really good, yeah. And then they have like some experimental stuff. Like Bubble was really awesome. Pig is like one of the best EPs that they've put out, and it's more like electronic-ish sort of. I don't know, but it's really good. And Drew Thompson solo stuff is awesome too, and it's completely different. So like check that out. But I love them so much.
Awesome. I'm excited to listen.
Almost met Drew Thompson after a show. I was like going right up to him, and then somebody wearing a, it was like a leopard print coat that looked like fake fur went up to him and talked to him, and then he left, and I was like, why? So I was like this close to like saying, hey.
But you need to wear a more outlandish outfit next time.
I need to.
And then just stride across the room in your assless chaps and be like, I'm M. Moore. Hello. It's my destiny to meet you finally.
Yeah. Just have like glow in the dark, like paint everywhere.
Well, it's too bad that M. Moore isn't the editor of a website where she could just reach out to said fan and say, I want to interview you. And they would say, okay. That's too bad that that's not the case.
I'm going M. You have to.
I have an email draft, like, locked and loaded.
Amazing.
Well, speaking of being locked and loaded, Fest 20 is even more locked and loaded because they've announced a bunch of new bands playing the festival. And bands that have already been announced include Hot Water Music, Anti-Flag, Pieball, Avail, The Suicide Machines, Chris Gethard, War on Women, Krobus Goals, Toys That Kill, Into It, Over It, and he, Bouncing Souls, Sam I Am, Flatliners, Cursive, Iron Sheik, The Yergs, City of Caterpillar, 12 Hour Turn, Mustard Plug, Tim Barry, and more. Well, here are, oh, Catbite's playing too, I think, or maybe they're not.
Catbite's playing.
Maybe, and Catbite. But here are the bands that have also just been added to Fest. Painted Black, Chuck Reagan of Hot Water Music, Copyrights Against All Authority, Scowl, Bad Cop, Bad Cop. And let's see who else. Pie Tasters, Broadway Calls, Warriors, Law Dispute, Joan Array, Agenon Caldwater, Chris Farron, Cliff Diver, Franz Nicolai, and a bunch more bands. And I will say that it is kind of cool how Fest is like, we've got all these cool bands, come on out. And then like a month later, they're like, here's even more new cool bands. And you're like, wow, you know. Rarely am I tempted to go to Fest. I'm plenty tempted to go to Fest now because we got Catbite, we got Painted Black, we got Chris Gethard, we got, let's see, who else? Thurgs, we've got probably some other Mikey Erg bands. Like I said, after I just saw Mikey Erg, the solo Mikey Erg band at Spring Slam Down 2, I am now a huge Mikey Erg. I mean, I was a fan before, but now I'm a big fan. Catbite and a bunch of other cool bands. Hallie Bullet, do you enjoy these additions? And Painted Black, they never officially broke up, but it's been like 6 years since they played a show, and here they are back again. And Scowl's playing too.
I know, I saw that. That's cool that Scowl's playing. I'll definitely check out Scowl. No, I mean, you guys know, like, I love Fest, and I am excited about all these announcements. I think these are all great bands. Just there's like a glaring thing to me with this lineup. Are you, like, anyone?
Oh, no, Big Moose Man Holington. Well, don't worry.
You're ridiculous. I just, for the amount of bands that have been announced now and the amount of like headliners and big bands and people, it's like the scene is what it is, and I'm not expecting Fest to make up for the fact that punk, this especially like this scene of punk, just hasn't had a lot of women in it just historically. But I'm looking at this lineup and I'm a little bit like, can we do something more to, you know, like, I don't think I'm being hypersensitive about it. There's just not a lot of women, not a lot of people of color. I feel like culturally a lot of other areas of entertainment and music and movies, like, I feel like people are trying to correct some of these mistakes, they're trying to course correct a little bit, and I just sort of feel, you know, I'm sure in the, you know, there's down in the bottom, I mean, there are definitely women here, there's definitely some great women, like, very excited about War on Women, I'm very excited about, you know, Warriors and Dark Thoughts, and lots of, there are some bands with women, it's just, to me, I still feel like the ratio is a bit off, and, you know, I'm, like, seeing some, like, ska bands, but like, I don't know. Did that occur to you guys when you were looking at this lineup, or is that just me?
I don't disagree with your analysis. The main thing that I thought was kind of lame about Maryland Death Fest is I don't think there's a single band with women on it, or if there was, it was like 1%. It was almost all dudes. And like we've talked about this, the concept that I'm about to say is, I don't know if it's weird to say this, but the bands with the women in it right now are doing kind of the coolest stuff right now. And maybe that's weird to say. Maybe it's not, like, we had that discussion. Like, the bands that I find most interesting that are doing, covering new ground are the bands with women in them, or the bands with a diverse group of people, not four dudes with beards, you know, singing about, you know, we'll get through the night if we hang on together. You know, and so I agree that maybe they could make a more concerted effort, but there are some cool bands with women in here. Catbite, Scowl, Tsunami Bomb. But yeah, could there be more girls in the spill? Sure. And speaking of which, what's a upcoming festival that's got a lot of girls in the bill? Punk New Summer Soiree 5. I mean, I didn't even do it on purpose. It's like mostly girls. So if you want to see bands with women in the band, Punk New Summer Soiree 5, July 2 in Philadelphia.
Listen, I don't want to hold Fest responsible for, like, a thing that's just kind of off in our scene in general. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're booking the bands that have had success. They're booking the bands that are recognizable names that people are excited to see. You know, so it's like I'm not trying to pin it on, like, Tony and those guys for, like, you know, they didn't create this situation. I just am one, you know, like, and I don't know who they reached out to. You know, it's possible that they, you know, tried to get Tilt to reunite and play, or Dance Hall Crashers, or, you know, I don't know who they reached out to that they, you know, got told no. But I just feel like there are some, you know, I think a lot of these bands are bands that haven't played in a while, and like there's lots of bands with women that fit that bill. I'd love to see Cub play. Does Cub play anymore? Can anyone get Cub to come out of the woodwork? I just, like, well, I don't know. It's, again, I'm like, I'm not really pinning it on Fest. I'm just saying that it was just like my gut reaction to reading the lineup. I was just a little bit like, womp womp. Like,
I will pin it on Fest, and here's why. There's a billion bands on this. There's a billion bands at Fest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they got, you know, I don't know, maybe 10 headliners. Of the 10 headliners, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, not a single girl in any of the 10 headliners, or woman in any of the 10 headliners.
And that's honestly true of the comedy too. There's no, I think, unless there's just names of female comedians I'm not recognized, I just didn't feel like any of the female headliners, I didn't feel like any of the comedy headliners were female either.
With the amount of money they're spending here, they could bring in the Avengers. I mean, the Avengers, a legendary first wave punk band, amazing still, you know.
Yes.
And they got a draw. I know they got a draw. They could bring in Surfport. You know, Surfport's not that expensive, you know. And also, maybe this time to spice it up with something a little bit outside the comfort zone, you know. Or if they want to be in this comfort zone, a band like, what's the name of that band? Discount or something like that. You know what I mean? Like,
oh my God, how amazing would be. But again, it's like, I can't hold them responsible for like trying to get old bands back together. But certainly, I don't know. It just does. It continues to disappoint me about, you know, I guess that's why I was so excited to see like Lunatics doing Punk Rock Bowling. That to me was like such a good get for that festival. You know, people were excited to see them. They're legitimately great. They hadn't played in a while. People were excited about it. It fit the level of excitement of like some of those other headliners. And I guess I just wish I was seeing something like some other names like that here, you know?
The Lunatics was an extremely well played hand because
yes,
it could have been bad. And people were like, well, they haven't played in a while. Maybe it won't be that good. And I didn't even really know that much about them. I became a huge fan just seeing them once. I mean, they were so awesome. You know what I mean? So, like you can have the same festival over and over with the same bands or some random spice, and that kind of is – that's where the magic is. Like I'm not trying to be a dick. Everyone's going to see Hot Water Music and Anti-Flag. You're like, yeah, Hot Water Music, it was great. Anti-Flag. But it won't be like a mind-blowing set, whereas Lunatics, it was like amazing because like no one knew what to expect. Yeah. They came out and they kicked ass. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That being said, I'm still excited about this festival. I will be there. This is a festival that I should say historically has been super supportive of my band, which is obviously a female fronted band. You know, I think it's also just, you know, it's partially, we can't go back and fix our history. Like a lot of these are bands that have had long time success in punk. And that's just not, we can't say that about that many bands with women in them, and that's our history, and we have to come to grips with that, you know. That got very serious. Sorry.
And more, any comments on the Fest Quagmire?
There are some great bands with women and non-binary people and like diverse folks in it, and you know, like I always like go through and make a list of bands that I'd see, even though I'm not going to go, cause it's in Florida and that's a really long way away. But Bad Cop would be so cool. Warriors, Scowl, Cliff Diver, Susie True are playing, Virginity's really good, Debt Neglector's really good, Restraining Order, talk show host Mobina Galore, Guilt, but I think all music festivals, they do have a responsibility to, end the boys club and make a safe space for, everyone who isn't a straight white man. So that's something, because there's so many bands out there that are doing just absolutely amazing things with members of all races, all sexualities, all gender identities, all everything, and they're doing it in a lot of cases a lot better than the really popular bands that get booked because they make people comfortable.
And you're right. A lot of the smaller names on the flyer, a lot of them have women. It's just those big names up top where you're just like, where are the where are the women? Where are they? You know? I'm glad that you of course, I'm glad you pointed out how there are lots and lots of great bands with women playing the festival, and as John said, some of them are the ones I'm actually the most excited to see because they're doing something that's new and cool, you know?
Yeah.
Although I'll also probably
turn out like I want it. Like I want it. But as long as I've got this bottle, we'll make it through the night.
Exactly.
And friendship is the most important thing. And we didn't do much. Or travel too far, or really try at anything, but that's okay. Nice. And we've got it. So I'll just sing some hot water music. Anyways, Enmore, tell us about Tits Up.
I thought maybe you were trying to make a pitch to headline Fest.
I need more flannel.
Your new solo act.
Hallie Bullet, I get it about Enmore. Hallie Bullet, is my contempt for Orcore, is it unfair and cruel, and am I pissing off people? Am I trashing on things that people enjoy for a fine reason?
I enjoy those things, and I still find it funny when you say that shit, because it's true. There's no criticism you're leveling at it, or way that you're poking fun at it that's not actually, on point, you know what I'm saying? And I can say that to someone that, I love hot water music. But, yeah, if you want to, make fun of, sort of the most generic, idea of that, I do think, of course, anything can be satirized. Anything can be poked fun at. I don't have a problem with you doing that.
Why can't every band sing about doing drugs, being crazy, and being self-destructive? That's what I want to hear. Not bands that are singing about drinking and being sad. Anyways, Enmore, tell us about Tits Up.
Tits Up, do not sing about drinking and being sad. Tits Up, sing about all sorts of awesome things. And their new song is called Gaffa. If you don't know who they are, they're a garage punk band out of Liverpool. They are awesome. I love them so much. They broke up for a little bit, and then they got back together. I'm so glad they're back together because they released their debut EP at the beginning of the year. And it's called Greatest Tits, which, just perfect. So they're great. They're going to be featured on something coming out, later on Friday called Cool New Band. So check that out when that comes out. But, their new song is called Gaffa and it's really good. It's an ode to gaffa tape, and it fixes everything. So I run through a list of stuff, and it's you got a hole in your clothes, gaffa tape. You know, you're caught with your tits out, gaffa tape, cover up your nipples. You know, your partner is being annoying, gaffa tape them, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And it's just, it's really catchy, it's really fun, it's really energetic. This song is such a pump up song. It's just, when you hear something and you just you're moving immediately and you're kind of anticipating the chorus so you can sing it. And then you start to know, then you start to get to know all the rest of the lyrics. It's just, I've listened to this song more times than, I don't know, I can count right now. It's so good, and I really, really, really want to hear more from them because they are amazing. And if they ever, well, came to Canada, that'd be really cool. I don't know about that, but it'd be really cool. What did you guys think of Gaffa by Tits Up?
I liked it. I liked it. I thought it was like, it was fun. I'm not going to like listen to it over and over again, but I was like perfectly like content to check it out, you know? I wish it had a video to go with it. Don't you feel like they could have done something so like, and maybe they still will, but I just seeing the picture of them and they seem like sassy and funny and tough. And I just was like, oh, I bet they could make like a killer video for this. John, were you into it?
What is the English John Black? And I talk about English buying exclusive life. No, this is cool. I like this band. This was the band that Enmore had where they were like in nun outfits and like doing witch like things, and it was cool.
No.
Right? That wasn't this band?
That was Panic Shack.
That's right. Well, yeah. Listen, they're both good bands and they're both English. And I like this band. I thought this track was real cool. I think this track, like Hallie said, is. I don't know if this kind of sound could carry an EP because it's very monosonic, which can be effective. So I dug this single as a single. I would hope that the EP would have a bit more variety sound-wise. Yeah. But I thought it was cool, fun. And like we said, with the women bands is, like you're not going to find right now a guy band singing about how useful duct tape is, whereas the girl bands or the women bands, let's do this funny song about duct tape and have some serious messages in it and have some funny messages in it, and they're just killing it. I mean, that's what I want to hear. I want to hear stuff I haven't heard before, and that's what this is, and this is real good. Speaking of stuff I've heard before, Screeching Weasel, I've got a new album coming out. It's called The Awful Disclosures of Screeching Weasel. It's self-released, and Screeching Weasel now is Mike Hunchback from the New Jersey scene, Mike Kennerty, Zach Bradner, and Pierre March. It follows Some Freak of Atavism, and the punk news commenters, of course, are thrilled and super excited about this. Interestingly, the record is $40 after shipping because the minimum media mail shipping on this is like 10 bucks or something. So pretty pricey. It's out July 15. I'll kick it off. Screeching Weasel is not that good of a band. They're boring, and I really don't know why they've had such longevity. I mean, they're okay, but they're nowhere near as good as the peer bands that came out from the same time that did kind of the same thing. Also, I gotta say, like Screeching Weasel titles are just so lame. Like they're written to appear clever and intelligent, but really they're just kind of pompous and needlessly strung out and disjointed. You know, Some Freaks of Atavism was the last one. The one before that was Carnival of Schadenfreude. It's like, if you got to try that hard with the title, maybe think again. I mean, look at some of the most powerful titles in music ever: London Calling, Exile on Main Street, Let It Be, The White Album. Those are all so much better titles than these strung out, goofy titles. And this band's been doing the same thing for the past 40 years. And for some reason, I mean, as much crap as other bands get, it is amazing that Ben Weasel has earned himself. I mean, kudos to him for playing his cards the way he played them. He punched two women in front of hundreds of people, and he gets a free pass for it, where many other artists could not shimmy out of that situation. So not from a moral standpoint, from a strategy standpoint, kudos to Ben Weasel for that. But I don't care about Screeching Weasel. I don't know why. I think because they are kind of bad guys and almost genuinely bad guys, that's why they've kind of maintained, whereas other bands that maybe aren't such bad guys have kind of faded away. I don't think the music's that great. I don't think the lyrics are that good at all. And I think it's wants to be taken as something serious, clever, and intelligent, and it just isn't. That's my take. That's John's take.
Wait, you're saying they're bad guys? I don't think they're bad guys. I mean, I think maybe we can talk about a possibly bad guy singular, but I don't think you can say everyone in the band is bad people. Some of those are great people, like super awesome people.
Well, fair enough. But then I'll say there's other bands where someone's been accused of being a bad guy, and everyone else says, well, if you're associating with that bad guy, that means you're a bad guy too. I actually don't buy that argument, but that is the prevailing argument in punk rock.
Right, but like most of their, but like the original lineup, I think, doesn't play with him because he's such
You mean like the old guys? You mean like Jughead? No, Jughead's a good dude.
Yeah.
All those guys are way before. I mean, and listen, a person isn't the same You know what I mean? And so I would not say that John Jughead or those guys are bad. John Jughead, from all accounts, is a nice guy. We've had him on the pod. He's a great guy. And technically, he's not in Screeching Weasel anymore. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So okay.
Yeah. Mike Hunchback's not a bad guy. Like, I just don't think any of these people are bad people. I think you have to be careful about, you know what I mean? Like,
you don't think Ben Weasel's a bad guy?
No, I didn't say Ben Weasel. I said, I don't think Mike Hunchback, no one's going to call Mike Hunchback a bad guy. That's like one of the nicest guys, you know?
Yeah, I don't know, Mike. I agree with you. But then why is he in this band? You know what I mean? Like, is there any other bands he could be in? So why being Screeching Weasel of all bands?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. I'd actually be kind of curious to, like, ask these guys on the DL, like, what is that about for them? And how is it to work with him? Because he's, you know, in the past been just so completely impossible for people to work with that I'm so
actually
curious to know what this current lineup's experience is, you know?
In our interview with Mike Park, we didn't even ask for any dirt. And I'm like, Mike, you're a great guy.
Yeah.
You're a great guy, and everybody likes working with you. And he's like, not one person. And I'm like, what? He's like, Ben Foster. Like, Mike Park brought it up, of all people.
But what's
funny
is that before he even said it was Ben Weasel, I knew it was Ben Weasel. Like, just from when he was like, there's one person that I fucking hated working with. And I knew, I was like, oh, here it comes. He's going to say Ben Weasel. yeah, I don't know. It's like, it is hard. I mean, he definitely has behaved super badly. You know, I guess I would say for the guys that are working with him, they must just sort of feel like, I would imagine, I don't want to put words in their mouths, but I would imagine that they're like, well, people make mistakes and I'm going to work with this person. And as long as he's behaving and treating me well and treating others well, then, you know, maybe we can like, let bygones be bygones. But you're right. It's for sure it's for sure problematic. I mean, I think he's definitely someone with like some mental illness stuff, right? Because he's an agoraphobic and he's got, you know, like all kinds of problems. I don't know how much we want to like, you know, I don't know how much leniency we want to like show towards someone if we feel like they've also been dealing with some mental health stuff. It's a complicated thing for sure, and I'm not the judge or the jury on this. I will say I fucking loved Screeching Weasel John, and I totally disagree. I think they were absolutely like of the bands that were doing that kind of shit back in the day. I just think, I mean, you Anthem for a New Tomorrow, My Brain Hurts, there's one other album from that era that's like just my Hallie.
Wiggle?
No, I don't like Wiggle, and I like some of Boogada Boogada.
How to Make Friends and Irritate People? Barbara the Doll?
Yeah, How to Make Enemies. Yes, How to Make Enemies. And I even loved Television City Dream. I mean, there's a bunch of those albums from the 90s that, like, they actually just fucking, they were the soundtrack to my life for, like, a really long time. And I stand by them. I still think musically, I still think they're fucking great. And I think some of his lyrics, I mean, you can say what you want about his titles, but some of his lyrics are definitely some of the smartest shit that anyone was putting forth in that kind of punk rock. You know what I mean? And he's like singing about, you know, the validity of religion and like all kinds of pretty deep shit, while everyone else in pop punk was singing about like, do you want to go to the fucking sock hop with me, or some like phony baloney bullshit, 50s phony baloney bullshit, you know? So yeah, I mean, of course I always respect your opinion, and I hear everything you're saying, and I'm like, yeah, I totally see why someone would have that opinion about Screeching Weasel. Like, it's not even that I don't get it. Like, I do get it, but I just do have to say, for me, like, that band was like everything. That band was literally everything to me for a time in my life. And a huge influence on me. And I did not check out, what was it? Some Freaks. I didn't check out that last album because, yeah, I've just kind of moved on, and I sort of have a bad taste in my mouth because of Ben's behavior in the past, and also just knowing so many people that have worked with him that have just had such a rotten, rotten experience with him, that it's kind of soured me on all of it. But people loved that album, and I listened to it, and I did think it was kind of surprisingly good, actually, for someone that's been like writing these kinds of songs for so long. I know there were a few people like flipped out over like a couple of the tracks, like Bleed Through Me. I know people were like, oh, I think this is one of the best songs that Ben ever wrote. I think it's fine, but it's like, as an album, it's, sorry, I'll stop talking about it, but I think Sweet Joan Weasel was good. And I think that musically, I think I'm impressed that he's still, doing stuff that I think like has some, I don't know, it has like some real merit to it. It's not, it doesn't feel like schlocky. It doesn't all feel like schlocky regurgitated ideas. Some of it does, but not all of it. And I don't know. I'll stop talking now. What are your thoughts on Screeching Weasel?
I've never liked them, and I don't really care for them at all.
So there, Hallie.
For them.
Oh,
it's like sorry.
A gut punch. She was so cold about that, right? That's the coldest I've ever heard M. Moore be.
It's like ice.
Ice cold, yes. She like turned into Elsa from Frozen and just like fucking shot ice through my heart right there.
It's our secret power as Canadians. We get so many.
You just get to harness ice, all of you.
Yeah.
Well, following that icy strain, yeah, Let's warm it up with a hot track. There's a new compilation out. The compilation is called Introductory Rites, and it's out on a label that doesn't have a name, so I don't know if that counts as a label or not. It's just out by some guy, I guess. And one of the tracks on it is by Abby Ooze. The Abby Ooze track is called Run and Hide, and what's very interesting about this is, of course, Abby Ooze is Jane from Posers, and right now she is in Liquids. Liquids. She's in the band Liquids. And the last Abby Ooze EP was called Abby Ooze R.I.P., which suggested that it might be the end of the project. And Abby is very quiet about her actions. Like, she doesn't, like, post on social media what she's doing or what she's working on. Things just kind of appear. I'm very glad that the Abby Ooze character, if you will, might not be over, because I thought the Abby Ooze R.I.P. EP was absolutely, I was just listening to, I thought it was fantastic. I was listening to it last week or the week before. And what's cool is the studio version and the demo version are so different than each other. And they're both so good. I really hope she does a full album, which would be killer. I mean, I kind of wish she had made the 7-inch a full album, maybe put like two more tracks on. I really think it could have been an album of the year. I think she's making some really great, interesting music. And I'm excited the project is still going. Hallie Blue, any comment on Abby Ooze's Run and Hide?
Yeah, I love this. This track was so good, and I was like also like you, just sort of happy to hear more stuff from her. I don't know, like I was neither sure that the RIP thing really was like saying that she was retiring that thing, nor do I know if that is what it meant. I don't know that releasing like sometimes people like the stuff that they give to comps is something that they just kind of recorded and hadn't had a chance to release yet, so I feel like I'm not sure exactly what direction her, you know, this iteration of her as an artist, I don't know what direction it's going in, but yeah, I was just super, super pleased to hear a new track by her. I just think she's fucking cool and does smart music that I'm always happy to listen to.
Yeah, this was great. I really liked the track, and I'm glad that, well, I mean, yeah, it's hard to know if, like, she's going to do more with Abby Ooze or what's going on there. But R.I.P. was really good, so I hope that more comes out. Like, she puts more out. That'd be really, really cool. I checked out a couple of the other, like, songs on the comp, and there are some other, like, really neat bands. Two, like, Total Sham, Easy Targets, Piss Kinks, Foil, and Ball Stomper. They were also cool. Like, it was a really neat, like, collection of songs. So, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of flipped through it quickly, too, and thought a lot of the other stuff was interesting, too. Yeah.
It sounds really good.
John, what happened to you?
Somebody play a track.
Oh, you want? Okay, sure. I really like this Abby's song. Let's hear it.
Run and Hide.
Just one, it's all the little fun.
And that was Abby Ooze. And we're back, and I'm going to go off on a rant. And here is my rant. So there's a group called Mount Westmore, which is Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, Too Short, and E-40. And the name's a little corny to begin with. They've released a couple of singles so far, and today they released their album. The kicker with the album is that you can't just buy the album. Or the album's called Bad MF-er. Well, actually, it's called Bad MFs. Like, I'm not even censoring myself. It's called Bad MFs. And the only way you can get the album is you have to go onto a website called Gala Music, and you have to buy an NFT for each song, kind of like iTunes, you pay 99 cents to download a song. Here, to get the song, you have to buy an NFT. And each of the songs are about 4,000. Well, and to buy an NFT, you can't even use cash. You have to buy a Gala Music token. And the price of the NFT fluctuates, but also the price of the Gala Music token fluctuates. So it's a real speculation here when you're trying to buy something. Speculation in the investment sense, which whoever knew buying a song would be so complicated. It used to be you go to the hardware store and say, I'd like to purchase that new Elvis Presley 7-inch. And the guy says, that'll be 64 cents. And you say, thanks. I can't wait to hear Hound Dog. Here's your 64 cents. But now I got to put my personal information on a website and then buy some tokens and hope the tokens go up in value, and then buy an NFT and hope the NFT goes up in value in order to listen to a song. At any rate, the point being is, and more, I don't know if you read this article or not, but you know the price of, if you want to buy an NFT, what do you think it costs to listen to one Mount Westmore song?
$8,000.
$300. It's a real bargain. So okay. Only $300 a song. They actually haven't sold that many of them. Each song has about 1,000 NFTs, but they've only sold about 200 for each song. However, I did some quick math. They're already up to about $1 million, which on any record, $1 million is pretty good, frankly. Unless you're like Taylor Swift or something. Like Ice Cube's last record, I think, sold like 10,000 copies. So I guess it was a smart move financially. If you watch one of the video, the debut video was called Big Subwoofer, and honestly, I was a huge Ice Cube fan. I still am an Ice Cube fan, but he's really bummed me out the past 4 years or so. Snoop, I'm not a huge Snoop fan, but I like Snoop a lot. E-40, I could take him or leave him. Too Short, I like Too Short, generally speaking. But so whenever supergroups come together and it's this big, like, pompous thing, or this, everyone's like, I can't believe Mick Jagger's recording a track with Jeff Beck and with, you know, Dave Stewart and with the guy that did the soundtrack to Game of Thrones, like it almost never is great. And here it seems like you would think these four guys who are all highly respected would really bring their A game, if anything, only to outshow each other. And this track, Big Subwoofer, is so bad. And so it's so nothing. The song is about how they've got a big subwoofer in their car, which is really disappointing because Ice Cube used to be like the king of like street political raps. Snoop, you know, not necessarily lyrically deep all the time, but he's very, you know, he's extremely flexible with his words, and he's a great lyricist in that context. Too Short and E-40 were never kings of the lyrics. But they're all like, I've got a big subwoofer in my car. Okay, I've got a big subwoofer in my car. Hooray. It's like really bad. And the video was like so dumb. It's like them in like Star Wars, but they're in like a very expensive backdrop, but then they'll have someone come on in like a $7.95 Kmart costume and like dance next to them. And for Snoop, that would actually be kind of cool, because Snoop is in a very good position in that, like, everyone respects him. He's considered a serious rapper, but he can be funny. I mean, he's kind of – as a performer, he's kind of modeled after Bootsy Collins, which is pretty cool, and I think he's even said as much. So he can be funny, but Ice Cube really isn't ever funny, and E-40 is never funny, and Too Short isn't – E-40 and Too Short are only funny in that they're when they're funny, they're making fun of someone else. They're the top guys, you know, or whatever. But here, it's like them just kind of walking around a Star Wars set, like not knowing what to do. And it's really bad. And so I feel like everyone's phoning in, and I'm not sure why we're doing any of this. The answer is, well, maybe to make money, I guess. And I realize I'm droning on and on. But I was thinking about this. You have to buy an NFT to listen to the album. And I wondered, like, is that abusive towards your fans? And do Ice Cube and Snoop respect their fans? And do they have any obligation towards their fan. I remember when Tim Armstrong put out an NFT. I thought that was pretty lit. Tim Armstrong put out some NFTs for $5,000 each. And, I mean, could NFTs go up in value? Possibly. But everything suggests that they are just nosediving, which they are. And so I thought it was kind of lame for Tim Armstrong to put out NFT. He put out NFTs for $5,000 each. And I got the impression people were just buying them to have a piece of Tim Armstrong. And he's got to know that. So, like, he's, like, basically milking his fans just for free money that isn't worth their investment at all. You buy it now for $20-$25. Like, yeah, you get something worth $20-$25. Even if you don't like it, it's still worth $20-$25. When you sell someone basically with a pyramid scheme for $5,000 or $300, it really is just abusing your fans. But on the other hand, it's like, if you're dumb enough to give Tim Armstrong $5,000 for something that you know is not going to be worth anything, is that your own fault, maybe? But that doesn't make Tim Armstrong a good guy. Likewise, like, a centerpiece of Ice Cube's music, even to this day, is fairness, you know, and being honest. And here he's just part of this weird pyramid scheme to rip people off to spend $300 for a song that is not going to be worth $300 2 months from now. And as a matter of fact, one of the listeners pointed out is you on a daily basis. So it's just not a good look. And they're abusing the fans, if you ask me. But on the other hand, if you're dumb enough to pay $300 for an NFT that's going to be worth nothing for a song about how Snoop has a subwoofer in his car, if you're dumb enough to pay maybe the money is better off in Snoop's hand because he knows what to do with it better than you do, you know? I just think this is – I've really been bummed out, but Ice Cube and KRS-One used to be my favorite MCs, battling it out for the best, my favorite MC. But over the past 4 years, KRS-One has just blown Ice Cube out of the water. I mean, first of all, Ice Cube's albums have been extremely hit or miss since War and Peace. And War and Peace are, like, really bad albums. His first four albums are killer. War and Peace are terrible. After that, he's been very hit or miss. His last album was called, not Corrupt Things. What was it called? Corrupt. Something Corrupt. Crap, I can't remember it. But it was all about how Donald Trump was a bad guy. And then a year went by, and he was talking about how Donald Trump was a great guy, and you should vote for him, which was bizarre. Like, his whole album was about how Donald Trump was a corrupt guy and a bad guy and a liar and is bad for black people. And then he's like, no, Donald Trump's actually good. And then he got off on a trippier vibe, and I don't even want to get into it, but he was posting memes and stuff that were not cool, you know, and not even not cool towards – a lot of them weren't not cool towards me, but not cool towards other people that aren't like me, which he got off on a very weird vibe. And then when Trump lost the election, he kind of swept that all under the rug and didn't ever mention it again when it was clear that's – you know. And so Ice Cube used to be kind of this pillar of political hip-hop and talking about systematic injustice and how the system is built against black people, in his opinion, and he would provide examples. And now he's just part of the scheme to cheat people out of money in an investment that almost certainly is going to crash within a month. And it's just not a good look, and it's hypocritical. And I think it's not a good look for anybody involved here, particularly since the song is so bad. I just think it's a bad look, people are like, is this the future of music? I don't think it's the future of music because it's so poorly handled and so cheesy. I think it's a dumb fad that come and go, and I think this dumb fad is going to be gone in at most a year.
Yeah, I totally had that too, where I was like, well, are they just making it so that regular people can't afford to just, like, do a simple thing like buy a song anymore? But then I thought about it and I was like, but the problem is regular people don't buy songs. People don't see music as something that they're supposed to freaking have to buy anymore. They think it's something that they're supposed to get for free. And, like, if you want to talk about a scheme, talk about, like, the owner of Spotify who decided to give away every artist's music.
True.
And not pay them. That's the scheme. So to me, like, I think this is, like, stupid and unfortunate. I'm certainly not paying that amount of money for a song, but I think artists are trying to figure out, like, well, what will people buy? They won't buy my fucking songs anymore. Like, what will they buy? You know? And I don't think artists should be obligated to have to tour for months and months and months out of the year. Like, you look at this, this is a super group. They're probably not planning on touring. So, you know, without touring, you look at these, this particular set of guys putting out this set of songs, they're probably, like, quite literally going to do it for free if they didn't figure out some way to get people to pay for this shit. And again, apparently if you call it an NFT and not an MP3, people will pay for it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I think it's stupid, but like, I think the whole situation we found ourselves in with music and buying music is so stupid. You know?
What do you make of the fact that this song is so terrible?
I mean, that's...
I got a subwoofer in my car. Hurrah!
That's a whole other thing. And then you wonder, like, well, did they think it was great? Because I don't think people put out stuff that, like, they don't think is great. Like, so they, like, have they lost touch? Do they think it's great? It's not? I don't know. That, yeah. The actual value... musically of what they're doing, it's hard to define that, you know.
I think when you're Adam Sandler and Netflix says, hey Adam, we'll give you like $50 million to come to Hawaii for 4 weeks and bring your friends, and you know, we'll film a movie when you got free time and we'll put that out, I think it's hard to say no to that.
Yeah, hell yeah, we'd all say yes to that.
Not everybody would, honestly, though. Like, some artists, like for example, RIP Jack Terrycloth, money literally was not a concern for Jack Terrycloth. I can't tell you. Like literally, he wouldn't even accept money if you try to give him money. Like, a lot of people say they don't care about money, but they really do. Jack Terrycloth really did not care about money. Like, literally. I got a subwoofer in my car. Isn't it cool? Just drive around town and act the fool. Listen, speaking of things that are not about subwoofer in their cars, it's about hair on your head. Century Egg have got a song called Little Piece of Hair. And more, tell us about the song and the video for Little Piece of Hair.
All right. So Century Egg, they are out of Halifax. And they're made up of Shane Q Song, Robert Drysdale, Maddie Grace, and Meg Yoshida. So, one of the, like, tags on Bandcamp for them is Mandopop, and I didn't know what that was, so I looked it up, and it's, like, Mandarin pop, like, music, and it's, like, pop music mixed with, like, jazz and, like, all sorts of different things, so that was really cool. And the song is really... really good. It's all about, like, the journey that a little piece of hair takes when it, like, falls. And then there's a bit about leaves. But, yeah, like, the hair, one of the lines is, like, it curled itself into a ball and rolled into the corner where it's safe from the vacuum. And it's just, the song makes me so happy. Like, every time I hear it, it's just, like, smile. It's so good. It's more poppy. But, like, there's really good riffs. It's just, it's fun and it's really good. And the video is so cool. So it's animated. Everything, like, it's clearly fake, but everything looks so real. Like, all the textures look so real. Like, it mainly takes place in a bathroom and, like, the tiles look real. Like, if you felt them, they feel like tiles. The toothpaste tube looks like if you, like, squished it, toothpaste would come out. And then it centers on a yarn doll that, has long hair and is only wearing underwear, and, hair, like, a hair will fall off of their head, and, you know, you'll see it, like, roll and go different places and, like, go on all sorts of adventures, and the lyrics will pop up on the screen at different points. And this is really cool because, Little Piece of Hair is off their EP of the same name, and the cover for the EP is somebody in their underwear holding up a little piece of hair with face. So it's like the album cover came to life in the video, and it's really fun and it's cute, and the yarn doll is really neat. It's just joy. That's all it is. Like, with so much like shit going on. It's just nice to listen to a song about hair and then think about where it goes. You know, what did you guys think of Century Egg?
John, I have to know what you thought of this.
I thought it was cool. I dug it. I always like, what's the word I'm looking for? Stop motion videos. And even if it's in a stop motion video, it kind of looks like a stop motion video. And I thought it was cool and I dug it.
I liked the video. I thought the video was great. The song, it's funny, John, because I actually, like, I was thinking ahead to this when you were saying before about the gaffer tape song. And you were like, I like this. It's fresh. I've never heard a song about gaff tape before. And I was like, yeah, that's true. I do appreciate like songs about things I haven't heard songs written about before, but this might be a little bit too far. For me. I don't need a song about a piece of hair and like its journey around the bathroom floor and like comparing it to leaves falling from trees. I couldn't buy in. The animation, the video I thought was like actually pretty awesome though.
Why is, like, other people's hair so gross?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Like if you walk in a bathroom and there's, like, a clump of hair there, you almost, like, want to vomit. You know what I mean? It's like honestly, like, if I walked into a bathroom and there's a clump of hair on the ground or there was, like, blood, I'd be more grossed out by the hair, honestly.
Well, right, and, like, you look at something else, like, from the natural world. Like, you look at, like an apple. Like an apple is like great and yummy, and then it has like a very long journey before it becomes something that's so like completely grosses you out. Like that's what? That's like a few days to like a week to like rot. But like hair is like fine when it's on the person, and then the instant it leaves the person's body, it becomes immediately like completely fucking disgusting.
Well, humans are, I mean, that's when you, like, humans are, like, really gross. Like, there's so many, like they're always sweating, and there's many mucous membranes on humans, and that's gross. It's gross, you know what I mean? I wish we were, like, lizards or something, you know? No mucous membranes.
All scales.
Well, I've got a subwoofer in my car. Here we are. Let's keep this podcast going. Because we're going kind of far. Listen, Bikini Kill, they've canceled some EU and UK shows. They said, due to a member of the band testing positive for COVID and other circumstances out of our control, Bikini Kill will be canceling, not postponing, our upcoming appearance fest at Prima Music Festival in Spain in June and their June, Italy, France, and Belgium and UK shows. And then just today, they canceled more USA shows due to the same issue. The Bikini Kill reunion has, oh, here you go. Here's the message from today. Multiple members of Bikini Kill are currently sick with COVID, so we'd be unable to play our shows in North Carolina, Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Georgia. We are extremely bummed that we've had to cancel this, and sorry to everyone who's planning to come. Poor Bikini Kill has been trapped in COVID hell in that they announced this huge reunion tour and then COVID hit, and then they rescheduled the dates and it was postponed again, and they rescheduled those dates and it's postponed again. And now, instead of, I guess, postponing the shows, they're canceling them. Kind of the word on the street is, well, maybe they don't even really want to do it anymore. That's the inside gossip and pure speculation that doesn't have any factual basis right now, aside from the fact that they're now canceling shows instead of postponing them. And more, what do you think the inside scoop is?
I don't think that it's true because, like, why would you use COVID as an excuse? You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So it's like, yeah, sure, no one's going to be like, oh, are you really sick? But it's such a serious thing.
I certainly believe they all have COVID, but the question is, instead of rescheduling, like, you know what, this just gets us off the hook, you know?
Yeah, I think they'll announce rescheduled dates, like, down the road. I think, because when they announced their openers for, like, Europe and the UK, like, they announced, like, amazing openers, like, Big Joni and, like, Problem Patterns and stuff. Like, I know that those bands have other tour dates, like, around the Bikini Kill dates. So maybe, like, it's just, like, a scheduling thing. Maybe they want to just cancel it. Everyone gets their money back. Then they'll announce rescheduled dates when they know everyone's at 100%. They know they can get the openers they want. They know they can do this and do it right, you know, like, do it as it should be instead of just, like, okay, we're going to tack these on to the end, and people in our last couple shows are just going to get, like, us at, you know, maybe, like, 50%. You know, I think that that's probably the safest bet with just canceling it and then rescheduling it when you know everything's going to go ahead as well as it can. So I think that's smart. And like COVID really, you know, like is a big, like kicks people on their ass. Like it's not just like, oh yeah, I'm good after, you know, my first negative test. It's like, you know, weeks afterwards. So I think it's smart too that they canceled the first, five shows of their US tour or their North American tour too, just to give themselves recovery time. Cause I think that's the angle for this. I think it's, we want to be there for our fans. They've waited so long. And we want to really give them the best of us that we can do, that we can be, I guess. Hallie, what did you make of it?
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like everyone's been canceling shows because of COVID. I mean, so I don't know if the people that are speculating just have, like, some set of information that I'm not privy to. It sounds like it, maybe. But to me, I'm just like, yeah, so what? Like, there's another band canceling because of COVID. Like, I don't know. My husband's, like, had to cancel, like, so many freaking shows, like, including the most recently, just, like, 3-4 weeks ago. And, like, it's not like he doesn't want to be a comedian anymore. So it seems like a little bit of a leap to me. You know, it's like a time when a lot of shit is getting canceled. And you said also, like, I everything I read was that, like, I read an interview with Kathleen Hanna where she was, like, thrilled to be playing with the band again. Now, you know, that being said, I have also, like, been like, I think I'll do something with the Unlovables again. Won't that be so fun? And then, like, the first couple of practices, I'm like, this is amazing. And then, like, 10 days in, I'm like, why did I do this? So, I mean, I guess there could be going something on, but I don't know. Right? To me, it seems like a little bit too early to be speculating again, unless the people that are saying this have some information that the rest of us are just not privy to. But it kind of reeks to me of, like, everyone's always like to talk shit about Bikini Kill, and, like, here they are talking shit about Bikini Kill again. But, you know, if they end up canceling more stuff down the road, then I guess we'll know there's more to it.
What I think it is I think actually they're canceling the shows because they've been asked to join Mount Westmore. And so I think they're canceling the shows.
They've been asked to turn the whole tour into an NFT.
Speaking of a band that is not canceling shows, here's a band that is adding a massive amount of shows. Starting in this month, the Melvins are going on a USA tour with Helms Ali and Harsh Mellow, and that tour is called the Electric Cockroach Tour. As soon as that tour ends, and more, do you know what the Melvins are doing as soon as their USA tour ends?
Touring the USA again!
They're doing a whole new USA tour back around again called the Five-Legged Tour. And let me tell you, I am psyched. I love the Melvins. Usually when they have two tours with two different names, it's a totally different set list, and they do a different set list every tour pretty much. So I'm basically getting to see the Melvins twice in like 4 months, and it's going to be a totally different. When I lived in the Bay Area, I got to see them 4 times a year, and so that was awesome. And now I get to see them like once a year. But this year I'm going to get to see them twice in like 3 months, and it's going to be a different tour, and it's going to be awesome. And the Melvins are the best band ever. People, I'm sorry, but it's true. It's true. While Ice Cube is promulgating certain COVID-related conspiracy theories and trying to sell me NFTs, Buzz Osborne's coming to my town and saying, $25, John, you want a full set twice? And I'm like, yes, I do, Buzz. So you've got two paths in life, people. The Ice Cube path or the Buzz Osborne path. And I think we all know the correct path these days. Let's do the last news story. Speaking of people choosing their path, the Sex Pistols have released a video for God Save the Queen. You're like, John, did the Sex Pistols release a video for God Save the Queen in 1976? Yes, but this is a new recut of it to help, I guess, celebrate, if you will, the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. It's basically just a re-edit of the song's the same. The video has got different clips in it. And, of course, it also comes in the middle of a Sex Pistols spat in that Steve Jones's New miniseries is out. A lot of people are saying it's kind of sanitized. Some people say it's kind of boring. Some people say it's kind of cool to get a story about Sex Pistols that isn't the standard Sex Pistols story. And of course, Johnny Rotten is saying that it's terrible and factually inaccurate. So who knows who to believe? There's probably truth and lies in all people's perspectives. That being said, in this video, it is really cool that I get to see yet again a young John Lydon, because John Lydon was the man. Some of the stuff he said recently is not cool, but that can never take away his enormous impact, both psychologically, socially, politically, and especially musically. And I will say, I get so annoyed at the young people and the old people. They're like, well, the Sex Pistols actually weren't that good. Or the better one, Stiff Little Fingers is better than the Sex Pistols. No way. Sex Pistols were amazing. I mean, that their only album is so incredibly good.
It's totally amazing. Yeah.
It's so clever. The riffs are so banging. Lydon's lyrics are so good. It's funny. It's serious. It's so good. And when people say, well, the Sex Pistols actually weren't that good, it just shows you that they're simple minded, that they're not able to, they want everything to be either all good or all bad, so they don't have to think for themselves. When the reality is, a lot of things and people are a little bit of A, a little bit of B, a little bit of C, a little bit of D. And so think for yourself, but the Sex Pistols album is amazing. Do I find this is kind of a cheesy PR stunt? Yes, I do. And actually, John Lydon also said it was a cheesy PR stunt. And he says he doesn't like how Sex Pistols are being marketed now and so forth. I don't really care. I mean, I'm not gonna get in John Lydon's corner and fight for on behalf of John Lydon these days. Although I happen to think he's right. But that being said, I think the Sex Pistols legacy is what it is. I don't see a radical reinterpretation or change of what it is. And if anything, sadly, like Elvis, sadly, like Sinatra or Dean Martin, sadly like Bing Crosby, well, actually not Bing Crosby, sadly like Tommy Miller, it's just going to kind of get a little bit weaker and a little bit weaker as the years go by until eventually not that many people care, which is sad, but that is the way of all things. I mean, no one cares about the guy that invented, you know, toilet paper. Like, what's that guy's name? I don't know, but it's kind of one of the most important inventions ever. You know what I mean? And so that's just the way of things, and Sex Pistols are what they're going to be. And no documentary is going to reinvigorate them or make them the hot thing again. And it'll just be kind of something interesting to watch, and they'll eventually fade away, which is sad. But like I said, that's how the universe works. Hallie Bullitt, what do you think of my Solomonic perspective?
Wait, are you asking me what I think about the story, or just what I think about your take on it?
I'm saying, I don't really have a baton to hand you with regard to this topic. Can you talk about the Sex Pistols, please?
I mean, John, I like had the same thing. Like, I'm watching this video, and it reminded me of that Adam and His Package song that's called Sting Cannot Possibly Be the Same Guy That Was in the Police, right? Isn't that the name of it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I'm looking at this and I'm like, this, like, John Lydon cannot possibly be the same guy that played in the Sex Pistols. Like, I was watching that old footage and just being like, oh my God, he used to just be, I don't know, so fucking, like, just this unbridled rebellion against the very kinds of figures that he has decided to embrace now. It just makes my head want to explode. But I don't know. I thought this was, I don't know. I couldn't really tell how different it was from the original. It seemed like there were maybe more crowd shots. And then wait, you guys, tell me, like, I felt like I was going crazy, because there's definitely a shot of Nancy Spungen in this version.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
And
I'm
I
right now.
Not remember that from the original. That's not in the original, right?
I don't think so.
No, it's not. I don't think so. And I was a little bit like, I didn't know how to feel about it. I was like, I wonder, are they trying to pay tribute to her as someone who was there, an important part of the band? But like, also, like, your bandmate killed her. I don't actually think it's cool to put her image in your video. Like, she was she was murdered by your band member. Like, how does her family feel about you putting her fucking face in your video? I know something about it, like, struck me as being kind of off. And yet, you know, I could just be I could be having the wrong read on it. I would imagine it was probably meant as, you know, like to pay tribute. I just sort of felt like, I don't know that y'all should be,
I'm not challenging you with this question. I'm genuinely asking you with this question. You are comfortable saying that Sid Vicious did kill Nancy and it wasn't maybe some drug dealer or something like that.
Yeah, no, he did it. I mean, even her mom thinks he did it and isn't even upset. Her mom's theory is that Nancy was, you know, in such a bad place that she thinks probably asked Sid to kill her. That's at least her mom, who, you know, I would imagine, you know, knew her about as well as anybody did. I remember that was her theory about what might have happened. But yes, I think he killed her. I don't think it was a drug deal gone wrong.
What's interesting is the English press really tried to paint the Sex Pistols and Lydon as stupid. And even watching this video, you can tell he's got such intelligence. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. I would agree with that.
And more, what's your stance on John Lydon being friggin' the whole band being awesome, honestly, here? Well, except for Sid Vicious.
I really like the Sex Pistols. They're the band that got me into punk. And then, yeah, like, we've talked about on previous podcasts, the Lydon of now is not
the Rotten of yore.
Yes. So, like, Hallie, I had the exact same thing. It's like, this used to be him. This is, like, his essence. This is him. What happened? Yeah. You know? And it just kind of, like, it bummed me out a bit. But, like, the video was cool because it was neat to see the footage, like, really clearly. Because I don't know if it's just, like, the version that I've seen of the previous video. But, like, it's super grainy and it's just, it looks really old. And this still looks a little old. I mean, but, like, it's a lot clearer. And the shots of the pit are really cool. And, like, Jordan's there. And it's just... I think Sue Catwoman's in it. Like, you know, you just see, like, everyone. Susie Sue. It's really, really cool to kind of get a snapshot of the scene at that time from somebody who's just filming, like, shit. Who's just like, yep, this is cool. I'm going to document it. And, you know, it's topical because now it's the... what is it? Platinum Jubilee. Yeah. You know, so it's topical that it came out, and then yeah, like it does, when I step back, it does make me feel a little kind of icky that it's just like, it's just to sell Pistol and it's just to sell their comp and all that kind of stuff. I haven't watched the show, so I can't weigh in on if it's good or bad. I really like Steve Jones' autobiography.
But
I haven't listened to the comp yet either, but I mean, it's just gonna be the same songs over and over again. So
I want so badly
14 songs.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Allie. I'm sorry. What's that?
Oh no, I want so badly for the show to be good, and I'm so disappointed, John. Like, actually, you're talking about it is really the first feedback I've like really heard about it. So I'm so bummed that people are saying they're not into it.
Yeah. I would say it has a definition of mixed reviews. When people say mixed reviews, they usually mean like mediocre. But I've seen some people say it's great and some people say it's absolutely terrible. So, you know.
Okay. All right. I'll just have to watch it.
I think the biggest problem with a lot of these kinds of things is it is not totally accurate, which is tough to make something like this accurate. But, like, I still haven't seen Straight Outta Compton because it's – for some reason, for some reason, for me, like, I didn't watch Straight Outta Compton, even though I love NWA. It's like, well, there's a lot of stuff that's not accurate in it. So it's like, well, why am I watching? I don't want to watch a semi-fake story. You know, I'd rather just read an autobiography, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, or like the Queen movie, which is totally they basically just like said, let's just not tell the true story. You know, it's like.
Oh, is that true? Well, I don't know enough about like the real like ins and outs of like Freddie Mercury's life and the trajectory of the band. Like, I don't know. I didn't know enough about it to know that I was watching stuff that was totally not true.
But not only that, it, the timeline is like way off. Like, it ends with like Live Aid or something.
Yeah.
But like that's like not like that wasn't like a huge moment for Queen. That was like another day, like another day. And they made that like be like the big thing where they all kind of get back. Like that just wasn't true at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but like, do you feel like it sounds like you know a lot about them. Was there like another moment that they could have used in place of that? Like, cause they did kind of need, like, just in terms of the narrative, you kind of need like something to end on, you know?
It's tough to get it. Like, with the Rolling Stones, you can kind of get a gauge because even though, like, Mick Jagger is kind of reticent to talk about things, like, he lets things out, and Keith Richards tells what he believes is his truth, if you will, and it's clear that he's exaggerating some things. But between Mick and Keith and maybe Ron, you can kind of, you know, get most of the real story, at least post Brian Jones.
Keep it together, yeah.
You know what I mean? But Queen is a little bit more difficult because Freddie Mercury is dead. And Brian May, I like Brian May a lot. Brian May isn't so dumb that he realizes by saying bad things about Freddie Mercury isn't going to help him at all. You know, so he always said, oh, Freddie Mercury was the greatest. But Freddie Mercury quite was a diva. According, if you read ephemera here or there, like, Freddie Mercury could be very difficult to work with in the studio. Sometimes he wouldn't return phone calls. So, let me draw another example. Like, I love AC/DC, but growing up, like, I thought AC/DC were a gang. They all hung out and were best friends, and they would go to bars and fight, and it's AC/DC? That is not AC/DC at all. AC/DC is Angus and Malcolm Young. Malcolm Young's passed away, sadly. Brian Jones is an employee. They never hung out. I'm not Brian Jones. Brian Jones. Who's in the Rolling Stones? Brian Jones. Who's the singer of AC/DC? Brian Jones? Brian. Why do I forget his name? Brian Johnson! Brian Johnson!
Yeah.
So AC/DC is not a gang. They are a business. And Malcolm and Angus hire people as needed, and those two write the songs, and they say to Brian Johnson, here's what you're going to sing, you know? And so it's not a gang of friends. It is literally a business where they don't even talk to each other at all outside of the context of the business. Queen may have been that way. And of course, in reality, it's probably a little bit messy. It probably isn't as clean as AC/DC, where Brian Johnson knows he's an employee, and they don't even tell him that they're using a different singer. You know what I mean? Whereas with Queen, it probably wasn't quite that clean, but Freddie Mercury was a incredibly talented individual. But he's often painted as a saint and a wonderful guy when other things, and I'm not saying he was a bad guy, I'm saying when you're super famous, it's hard to be a perfect individual. But like, he was very selfish and a diva and can be annoying to be with. And so, whereas Queen in the movies presented as a gang, we're Queen. That might not have been the case following, say, The Game, you know? And so the point being is, I don't know if there was any one moment where this big thing happened. Queen was a band nonstop from 1970 through 1993 or 1992 when Freddie Mercury died. I think the moment is when they find out that Freddie Mercury has AIDS and Freddie Mercury knows he's going to die. And he says, I'm going to record as much music as I can. And then after I die, you all can put music to the background. And that's the last two Queen albums.
Yeah.
And so now that's not as fun as a story, or compelling, but that's the real story. So I'd rather read the autobiography than watch a fictional account that isn't even accurate because here's why, because then I get confused. I'm like, oh, that's right. At Live Aid, they almost broke up, but they got back together. And I start thinking that's real, but that's not real. And that didn't happen. You know what I mean? And so I get confused.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Whereas if you read the autobiography, you understand that that's the person's point of view, but you don't confuse fiction with reality, you know.
But it's like the truth. The true thing that happened is so it's super emotional, right, and super moving. But maybe wouldn't play out as well on a movie screen. It's like you do get why, you know what I mean? Like
you actually could make that a whole movie, like the last 3 years of Queen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you really want to get bummed out, watch the last Queen music video, and it's when like Freddie has like AIDS, like really bad, and they didn't really have treatment for it at the time, and he looks so sick in the video. It's like a real bummer.
No, I can't watch that. I can't watch that.
And not to go off on the Queen tangent, and we'll wrap this one up. They're releasing an unreleased Queen song like next week. And I'm like, well, is that an unreleased Queen song? Or do they just do what they do with ODB? Take a scrap and build a song around it, which I feel is a little disingenuous. You know, like Queen really, it does, like if you look at the Queen remasters, which are all very well done, there aren't any real bonus tracks. There's live cuts or demos or alternate mixes. But Queen isn't the kind of – like Ozzy Osbourne like has unreleased songs because they're bad and they just didn't release it, you know. The Rolling Stones don't have – there are no unreleased Rolling Stones songs. There are unreleased scraps that they've built up over the years for bonus tracks. But there's not like unreleased finished songs. Well, Queen's like, we've got an unreleased finished song. I don't buy it. I think it's probably a scrap or a demo built up, which I feel like if they were honest about it, people would care almost as much as if it was some unreleased song. And they're always a letdown anyway. It's never an amazing song. It's always a mediocre song anyways, you know.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it just I only care if it's good or not. I don't, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care how they had to Frankenstein it together. Or like, if it's either like something I'm excited to listen to or it's not, you know.
Well, there you have it. What an episode. We really covered a lot of territory this episode, didn't we?
And I personally expressed a lot of long-winded opinions, so I just hope people were interested in hearing all of that.
And more, why does Hallie always apologize for giving long-winded opinions when I am the most long-winded of all opinion givers on this show by a factor of three? I mean, there was that one episode where I talked about Taylor Swift for 28 minutes, literally, yep. You know.
I mean, because this is what, like, this is like an hour and a half episode. Like, who, does anyone, I'm curious to know, now that the emails are working again, like, does anyone listen to an hour and a half episode of a podcast? Like, I don't think I do. The podcast that I listen to, I don't know if I listen to an hour and a half of anything.
Yeah, I do feel like the hour 10 is kind of the drop off, you know, hour 10 minutes. At any rate, if you made it this far, email us at podcast@punknews.org and let us know. And here comes a song, and I'm going to play Tits Up doing Gaffa Tape. And we'll see you next week, Mikey.
Tiny little